Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Central Asia Metals 2012 Results Conference Call on Wednesday, 27th of March, 2013. Our speakers today will be Nick Clark, CEO, Nigel Robinson, CFO, and Howard Nicholson, Technical Director. I would now like to hand the call over to Nick Clark. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. And to those in the room, welcome. This is a momentous occasion for any company. This is our first presentation of annual results. And I think you'll hear a good news story in an industry which hitherto has had some dark days over the last few months and years. The highlights of our 2012 have been our production. We've done two things. We've delivered a project under budget. When we listed in late 2010, we said we would build an SXEW copper plant in Kazakhstan, and we cost $47 million. We brought it in for $39, so under budget. We then started production in April 2012, and in the 8 months to the end of the year, we produced over 6,500 tons of copper. That gave the project revenue of $51 million from a standing start. And so for the group, we maintained, we show an operating profit of about $15 million. But there's a number of elements to any company. One is you have to build it, build your project, and hopefully build it under budget, as we've shown. But then you have to operate it successfully. Now, our cash costs, our C1 cash cost, which is all the cost, direct costs with producing copper, and our mineral extraction tax, our royalty, and the selling cost of getting that product to market is 71 cents a pound, $1,562 per ton of copper produced. We received well over $7,000 per ton sales last year, and my colleague Nigel will take you through some of those numbers in a minute. So that means at the year end we have close to $34 million in the bank. What did that allow us to do? Announce a dividend policy last year. And I can say now, as our final result, we will be proposing a final dividend payment of 3.7p, which will take our total dividend payment, both annual and special, to 10.7 pence for the year. We will be returning for 2012 over $16 million back to shareholders. And interestingly, when we listed in 2010, we raised $60 million primarily to build this project here at Kunrad. In just over 2 years, we will have returned something of the order of 27% of that original cash raising in late 2010. I think you'll agree that is a very much a win-win for both the company and for shareholders. At the time of IPO, we promised that we would put all our resources onto a JORC compliance standard, which we've done. So the company at a glance, we built a plant of 10,000 tons capacity on an annual basis. It's done in 21 months. We've now had 11 months of continuous operation. And I think most importantly, through the winter period, when in November and December last year and in January this year, we experienced conditions for extended periods of minus 15, 20 degrees centigrade. And in one period in December, we experienced a 10-day period of minus 32 degrees centigrade. We maintained operations throughout that period because we designed the plant to do so. So in 8 months of last year, we produced over 6,500 tons of copper, and we sold 6,400 or thereabouts tons of copper. Our direct cash costs, the cash cost of producing copper on site, that is labor, power, reagents, 35 cents per pound. Now, you can look at any of the cash cost curves from any of the industry economists, and that will be very, very much on the lowest decile on the cash cost curve. That enabled us to instigate last year a share buyback program. We bought 1.3 million shares of the company. We did announce a maiden and interim dividend, a special dividend of 7p back in December, which put with our 3.7p that we're announcing today, or that we're proposing today, is 10.7p per share that we will return on our 2012 performance. And our JORC compliance statement that we have now announced with our results this morning show that we have over 600,000 tonnes of contained copper within the Kounrad dumps. This photograph you will see to the right-hand side of this page just shows some of the copper in the foreground here bundled in 1.5-ton bundles ready for shipment. And there's our copper cathodes, which run at a purity of well over 99% copper. I've given you an overview of the company's performance. I'll now hand over to my colleague Nigel Robinson, who will take you through the financial figures. Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Well, morning, ladies. Morning, gentlemen. This is a quick overview of the financial performance of the group for the 12 months in 2012, which primarily are 8 months of production, 4 months of construction. I guess the first thing really to highlight, for those of you who don't know the company that well, and even those who do follow the company quite rigorously, is that our main profit generator is a 60-40 joint venture, and therefore you'll see running throughout the numbers, both in the income statement and in the balance sheet, that we're only taking 60% of the results, 60% of the assets in most cases, so it can sometimes be a little bit confusing. So I just put that up right up front so people don't get confused with some of the numbers. First of all, the revenue line, the top line, Nick mentioned 51 million of project revenue. That's what we achieved in the 8 months from the 1st of May, effectively. And we sold that copper at $7,935 per tonne on average. At a group level, it's $30.7 million of revenue, getting the 60% bank that comes in there. And most of the copper we sold was on an offtake deal with a company called Traxys that we've agreed to sell 90% of our production to. And basically, we sell the copper at spot prices. But we also sell, and last year we sold 320 tonnes locally, which we get good prices for, and also is beneficial in terms of recovering VAT that we incur in the construction program. That revenue generated a gross profit line of $24.9 million after cost of sales, as you can see there, of 5.9 at the group level and close to $10 million at the project level. Thereafter, obviously, we've got costs of distributing the copper. We've got our general overheads in the area. I'll come on to a bit more on the actual cost side of it in a minute. And then we've got our costs in London. We have a fairly small office team, 6 to 7 people, and we manage the business from there and set up the business from there. We've got G&A in Mongolia as well, where Nick or Howard will touch on some of the assets we've got in Mongolia and what we're doing out there. Basically, that gives an operating profit of $15.1 million. And an EBITDA of $16.1 million, adding back the depreciation for the period of $1 million. That depreciation, in this period is actually quite light because we only started depreciating the assets from effectively when we commissioned the plant, which was the middle of the year. So it's only really 6 months depreciation. We would expect on an ongoing basis the depreciation charge to be of the magnitude of about $3 million per annum. Just a bit more on the unit cost of production. Obviously, it's great selling the copper, but you have to produce it cheaply to make good profits like we're making. That pie chart there is basically all the costs that we incur in Kazakhstan. The whole circle comes to $2,167 per tonne. So that's fully inclusive cost of producing the copper and every cost we incur within Kazakhstan. Just under a dollar per pound for the copper. Breaking it down to the constituent parts, though, you'll see obviously, one of the large components of that is cost of production, the actual physical cost of producing the cathode copper. And that's $770 per tonne, or 35 cents per pound. Effectively, that cost includes all the cost for electricity, all the reagents in the plant, the coal for heating the plant and the solutions in the winter period, all the labour. It's not really labour intensive. We employ about 230 people on the site, and when Howard shows you a video later on, you'll see it's not overly manned in any shape or form. It's a pretty lean plant, actually. And then there's a site overhead, so the people have to be managing the transportation and everything else on site. Government taxes, effectively a royalty. It's 5.7% on the top line. Can't avoid that. It's a cost of production effectively, and that adds on another $455 per tonne. And then the other cost to bring us to a C1 cash cost of production is the distribution and selling costs. I mentioned before we've got an offtake agreement with a company called Traxys, and we estimate last year it cost $337 per tonne to ship the copper around the world. Most of the copper last year, and indeed for this year, will be going to the Turkish markets for the copper wire manufacturers in Turkey. And then just to complete the picture, obviously we have depreciation, $238 per tonne there, and we've got the G&A costs at Balkhash, general director, lawyers, accountants, people managing that side of the business. I think you'll agree that by anybody's standards, even with all the costs thrown in, less than a dollar per pound is cheap copper, and we're well within the lowest quartile and the T1 cash cost produced with copper. So that's the performance of the group. Balance sheet wise and cash flow, again, very strong balance sheet. We raised $60 million, as you know, at IPO about 2 years ago. As Nick mentioned, interesting fact, we've returned 27% of that money already to shareholders. But we are 100% equity financed. I have to, my lawyer will tell me, I have to caveat that a little bit because we have got $150,000 effectively of debt on the books in Mongolia, which is an investment made by a company called Ibex into the Allied Bayan project. It's not really debt. I don't envisage having to pay it back, and it will be converted into equity once the Mongolian market becomes a little bit easier to deal with. So effectively no debt and 100% equity finance. As you can see there, pretty strong cash flow. The cash as at the year end was $33.9 million. But the cash generation from the project, as you can see, down at the bottom here, is close to $18 million. And that will continue, obviously, this year. And in fact, the cash generation is slightly better than that, purely because the construction program itself was financed through loans from the Topco in London. And those loans are being paid back as a priority repayment from the cash flows generated from selling the copper. We expect those loans to be fully repaid towards the end of quarter one next year. And then as it turns to shareholders, Nick's already made the message. I don't want to labour the point, but it is pretty impressive that we returned $16.3 million. In fact, just to qualify that, we've actually returned so far only $11.5 million, the dividends and the share buyback scheme. We are proposing a final dividend of 3.7 pence. And I think about the share price this morning before whatever reaction it's had to the results this morning, that was a yield just under 10%, including the special dividend, and excluding it was close to 7% as a yield. So those are the finances of the group. I'll now hand over to Howard just to expand a bit more on the operation and the technical aspects.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The key to CAML's success this year has been the strong operational performance of the plant and how successful we were in getting the commissioning and the ramp-up completed through this first year. When we were developing our plans, we took a relatively cautious view on what our ramp-up period would be and the commissioning time, and we forecasting there something around about 4 to 6 months. At the time we were doing that, I was noticing in various press releases that other companies were forecasting more pessimistic and actually more realistic ramp-up times in the region approaching 12 months, and from previous experience I found that. So the actual ramp-up that we achieved at Coonrad really was better than our expectations. This graph just shows you the blue plan, and the red blocks show us exactly what we achieved. We actually had a slightly higher amount of copper to start off with, and we were failing away before coming up. And that was because we've been accumulating various copper solutions during the construction phase that were of good grade, and we knew would give us a boost just as we started, and then we would gradually follow the plan. And as you can see there, effectively each and every month we beat our planned target. And that was basically down to two things. It was down to the competent design of the plant and the selection of the equipment. It also is very much a testimony to the quality of people that we've got locally working in our company, and their skills. And it should be noted that more than 99% of the people working in our company are local people. We have one single expatriate in Kazakhstan. This is an interesting graph for you. As you can see here, this is just a photograph of the top of one of the dumps that we're currently leaching. This is dump 9 and 10, showing the irrigation pipework laid out. This graph shows the amount of copper which is being leached from the dumps on a daily basis. And we don't manufacture copper, we recover copper that is leached out of the dump. So if the dumps don't release the copper, we don't make it. And when we designed the plant was designed for an output rate of about 28 tons of copper per day. And as you can see, for the vast majority of the year, the amount of copper that has been leached from the dumps has been well in excess of that 28-ton period. Just a couple of points. You may see a couple of dips here, and I can explain those. This first dip was, in fact, that we very purposely, for the first 3 months of the project, ran two blocks of ore until they got to a level where the copper output was such that we had to bring more material on. The reason we did that was to try and get a good assessment of actually how were we leaching in comparison to what we'd forecast we would do. And so that period of time there allowed us to confirm that in fact we were leaching very much in line with our anticipated plan. This curve here, this section of the curve was flat. We were going into winter, we were reducing our flow rates, starting to build up temperatures, so that we would then come in and continue more or less along that line. But you may believe it or not, we are not infallible. And in fact, in this period here, we had a short delivery of pipework. And so we weren't, in fact, able to leach a couple of the blocks as scheduled. And this impacted by just lowering the grade there. But despite that, as soon as the pipework was all in place, we picked up and continued as scheduled, beating the annual forecast. This is just a short video. That's the solution dripping out onto the ducts. This was taken on the 1st of March. The temperature was minus 18. That's a view of the plant. You can see the solution's all free running. There we have our wagons waiting to load up copper. This is the key to the plant that keeps us running through winter. This is a three boiler system, 8.4 megawatts of power. Solutions coming back from the dump. This is inside the solvent extraction house, and as you can see, very large area, large equipment, no people, or very few people. Three people run this entire section of the plant. This is the rich copper sulfate electrolyte before it goes off to the electrowinning house. This is our control room. All computerized system. All working very well. Copper is being lifted, being washed off and prepared for stripping. We have a manual system. You can buy machines to do this, but we've got some pretty good guys that are fairly effective at it. This guy does 800 of those sheets every day. Copper waiting to be loaded up and being put in the wagons to be sold to Traxys and off to Turkey. Very quick video. Just a little bit more on the technical side about how successful we have been in this first 12 months. Again, one of the keys in the plant is recovering the copper that comes in the solution. The design recovery for this solvent extraction plant is 85%. And for the vast bulk of the year, in the configuration that we were running the plant, we were achieving an average of between 90 and 95. you can have a configuration that absolutely maximises the throughput of copper that you produce. You produce copper, but you do that by recycling a bit more copper back to the dump, so your stripping efficiency drops off. And that's what we did in that period. And that low point there links in with that high point there. We normally run under the situation of running two mixer settlers. This period we were running three, massive volume, in excess of 750 cubic meters per hour. In fact, we even went past that. There was a few days where we got above 900 cubic meters an hour. Then we started coming down in October, November, starting preparing for that winter period, where we were designing to run at about 400 cubic meters an hour. Again, there's a sharp drop there. We can't explain that. Unfortunately, we lost power. We had a power outage on the 10th of December. It stopped us for 16 hours. We had emergency plans already in place. The plant got back up and running again. And it actually took probably about 3 weeks before we got back to our design flow rates. We learned lessons from that. And certainly next winter, or this coming winter, such an incident wouldn't cause us any additional problems. This is the key for our success of running through winter. We built an 8.4 megawatt boiler house, coal-fired boilers. We have three of them. During the summer period, we only run one. We need to heat the solution for electrowinning, but run one. During winter, as it gets progressively colder, we start at the second, we start at the third. And during the period, December, January, February, all three boilers were running full mass. This here is actually heat exchanger, whereby we bring in the solution coming off the dumps, heat it up, put it through the solvent extraction system, and then back out to the dumps. This illustrates the point that Nick was mentioning earlier. The only reason this graph doesn't start there is because we only started recording external temperatures in the middle of November. But you can see that this is zero. So from the middle of November, Balkhash was running at around about minus 5 degrees centigrade. Early December, plummeted down to minus 35 for a period of 10 days. And then has averaged around about minus 18, minus 15 for the rest of the winter period. The blue line is the temperature of the solution that we're pumping out onto the dumps. And this is maintained by that boiler system and the heat exchanger that I showed you there. We were running, coming out of the summer period, the solutions are running at about 15, 16 degrees. We tried to maintain, we designed to maintain the temperature around about 10 degrees. When we had the problem here in the middle of December with the power outage and the extreme cold, we boosted the temperature of the solution up to above 20 degrees. And we ran like that for more than a month until we'd overcome the problem. Then we lowered it down again, increased the flow rate, and have maintained ever since a very nice and steady 15 degrees. These two graphs give me comfort, which would give you comfort, about the leachability of the material that we have on our dumps. The curve on the right, as you know, for 3 years we did pilot testing with a mini plant, and from that we developed lots of engineering information, lots of metallurgical information, and one of them was a predicted recovery curve for our copper, which is the brown curve. And this curve forecast how long it would take us to reach 100% of the soluble copper. The blue curve is what we're actually achieving on site. And as you can see, it's to the left of the design curve, which means that it's performing better. And we're actually getting more copper and at a faster rate than we originally predicted. At this point in time, after 250 days of operations, we have got 90% of the predicted copper from dump 9 and 10. We're still running solely on dump 9 and 10 now. By the end of March, I expect that number to be at least 95%, and we're very, very confident that we will meet our design forecast of what we expect to achieve from the dump. On the left is just a slightly technical graph, but it gives us an indication as to why we're achieving what we are. There are two types of copper within our dumps. There's what's called oxide copper. That dissolves very, very easily with sulfuric acid. Then there are other copper species which are associated with sulfides, and they leach more slowly with acid. But in a combination, a natural combination that you find in these dumps, you get leaching of iron, and you also get associated bacterial activity, which enhances both the conversion of iron from, sorry for being so technical, but from ferrous iron to ferric iron. Ferric iron is a very strong oxidant that attacks sulfide crystals. And the bacteria enhance that reaction. And you can see by this graph that as we started off with the copper recovery, we reached a plateau. And then in midsummer, for no reason that we were changing anything in the solutions or anything like that, all of a sudden we got an absolute step change kick in the amount of ferric iron that was being produced. And that step change kick was because the bacteria that are inside that dump naturally really started working and converting iron to attack the copper mineralization. This has also got an added impact on the amount of acid that we need for the project. When we started out, everybody was very concerned about how much acid we would be using. Through this natural process, this releases a lot of acid into the system. And in fact, we've come out of the winter period now with more acid in the system than we'd actually like. So we haven't been adding very much acid at all during the winter period, positive on costs, positive on logistics, etc. And we expect this to continue through the coming year. Just very quickly, this is for 2013, our leaching plant. As I say, all of the copper this year has come from dump 9 and 10. It's March, it's almost the end of March. We're still leaching dump 9 and 10 now. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this, Nick, but as of today, we recovered 41 tons of copper from dump 9 and 10, which is, remember, the design for this plant is 28 tons a day. So that's after a year's leaching, going through a full winter, and the solutions coming out of that section of the dump are still very, very nice. Our plan here is for the summer leaching this year, we're going to concentrate on the lower section of dump 6 and the lower section of dump 7. And you can see here we have these pink blocks. They're what we call our winter leaching blocks. This year, we had the one block for winter, which allowed us to maintain our throughput, which allowed us to maintain our targets. We learned from that, and for this coming winter, we're going to have an area which is going to be at least twice that we had. And so, in terms of any restrictions on copper output in winter, we should expect none this year. When we did the IPO, we were very clear at the outset that all of the resources that we were referring to in the document were all based on historical records, that they weren't JORC compliant, and that they weren't compliant with any form of Soviet data. They were all based on historical information. In the past 2-3 years, under the guidance of the Wardells Armstrong, we've drilled about 325 boreholes, over 7,500 meters of drilling length, almost 4,000 samples, assay, 1.5 kilometers of trenching. A lot of work has gone into this. And Wardell Armstrong have now come out with a JORC compliant resource for the eastern and the western dumps, which are confirming that we have got 614,000 tons of contained copper, which in fact is very, very similar to the historical number that we got at the IPO date. The one area that has fallen short of what we thought we had was in this little area here called the Northern Ducks. This is material that was dumped in the late 80s, early 1990s, as the Soviet Union was not as efficient as it previously was. In this area, we have determined that, in fact, we don't have as much copper as we initially thought at IPO. The original records indicated there was as much as 100,000 tons of copper there. In fact, the total amount of copper is about 16,000. But our plans were never anyway to go anywhere near this material for probably another 10 years. So it's not material to us. The materials we have here will give us a mine life of approximately 25 years. The final curve that I've, the final graph that I've got here is just that people I think have been waiting for a little bit of an update on where we are with our metallurgical testing. We've completed probably about 12 column tests, I think, by now, and we've got another six ongoing, which will be finished at the end of April. This curve here is a nest of curves that, as you can see, is all indicating that the recovery from a column test, we can expect anywhere between 35-37% upwards of around about 45%. This is a little bit better than what we originally forecast 2 or 3 years ago. And as you can see, you're looking at somewhere in the region about 43% so far. We ran the mini plant across at the sulfide area, and we achieved a 45% recovery from there. These numbers all tie in with the work that has been done by Wardells on assaying the samples from the drilling, where in fact we are looking at about 47% acid-soluble copper throughout the western dump and the eastern dump. And just to conclude for you, we've always previously, when we've spoken about these dumps, denoted the eastern dumps as oxide material and the western dumps as sulfide and what's called mixed material. And the results of metallurgical testing, the results of the drilling, are now indicating that, in fact, over 70, 80 years of natural activity, including the bacteria that I mentioned earlier, including all of that iron leaching, that there's a lot of natural oxidation occurred in this dump, and the properties of this material are now looking very similar, in fact, to the properties of the eastern dumps. So we think that in terms of metallurgical recovery, in terms of acid consumption and operating costs, that this material will perform very similarly to what we're actually seeing on the eastern side. Thank you.
Thanks, Harry. Now, turning to Mongolia, I don't think I need necessarily to linger too long. I think everybody will be familiar that Mongolia is going through some particular issues at the moment, not least of which is the new foreign investment code, which needs quantifying by the state. They've also brought to the fore a draft mining code, which many of the operators within Mongolia are in discussions with the government over. And also, there is a presidential election in June of this year. I think all of these issues lead to the industry being unsure as to where Mongolia is going, and it's well recorded, obviously, the problems that Oyu Tolgoi is having with government in that country. But nonetheless, we maintain a number of assets in Mongolia. They're not high priority for us at this present time, but nonetheless, they are on our books. Alak Bayan, which is a copper-gold porphyry target in the southern Gobi region of Mongolia. We did, between ourselves and joint venture partners IBEX, we've done quite a bit of drilling last year. They did 3,500 meters of drilling to on a farm-in, earn-in, to get 35% of the project. And then we, with IBEX, undertook another 820-meter drill program toward the end of last year to enable us to get information to apply for a mining permit. That mining permit actually was submitted to the ministry yesterday to enable us to transfer the exploration license into a mining permit, and that is ongoing. So notwithstanding the issues politically within the country, we're still obviously undertaking our obligations on these licensed areas. And then Hangate and Arine, which is well reported, and we have done so over many months, are still held for sale. We do have interest on those, but obviously they don't progress as quickly as we would like, not least because of the uncertainty of the political climate within Mongolia. So that basically is all the projects we have now, an update, and where are we going, what are we looking forward to do this next year. To the end of Q1, next Sunday, Howard said we pulled 41 tonnes of copper today. By my reckoning, that means we've produced this quarter 1,560 tonnes of copper. So we expect to achieve 1,650 tonnes of copper for this quarter, which, again, is above our budgeted amount by, can somebody do the math there, 334, is that right? Okay. And we will have sold 1,500 tonnes of copper already this quarter. I was looking this morning, we have a webcam that gives me a live update of the site. We have railway wagons on site and we're loading them as we speak. Where are we from a cash perspective today? Well, we still have over $29 million. Remember that we paid out our dividend of $9 million, I think it was, in February, which was the special and interim for last year. And, of course, we're now announcing our proposal for a 3.7p dividend to be paid end of May this year, after our AGM has approved that dividend payment, final dividend payment. So where do we look forward to going in 2013? I know you guys all say, right, that's fine. You've done everything last year. Where are we going this next year? Well, obviously, we're going to consolidate on our 10,000 tonnes of copper production. That is our number one priority, and not just on the output, but at a 35 cents a pound cost that we demonstrated, that is going to be very much in our focus. I think we have to accept there are cost pressures on everybody, all the mining industry, not least on wages and salaries and what have you, but our main focus as an operational company will be to maintain an extremely close control of our costs of production. Obviously, we look to see development on the acquisition of the 40% of the project, and we will be making a statement in the second quarter of this year that will update the market as to where we are with that process. Obviously, by the end of the year, I hope there will be some resolution on the sale of Arine and Hangate. And obviously, Alec Bayan, we would expect to get results back from the ministry as to our application for the mining license. Howard showed you the metallurgical test work we're doing on the dump material. And that will allow us to make the assessment as to whether or not a second plant is technically viable, financially sound. But obviously, though that issue about decision on a second plant is predicated very much on the resolution on the 40% ownership issue. But I would say also, as a company, we have cash. I think we're good at what we do. A strong owners team is what delivers projects to the market. We've shown capital discipline. We've shown good financial discipline in terms of managing the projects. And as Howard said, and this is very important, the vast majority of our employees in Kazakhstan are of Kazakh nationals, Russians. We do not have a great swathe of expatriates running and managing our projects. We believe very much in investing in good people locally and training those people, and I think that's been borne out by the results that we show the market today. But also, we will look at other opportunities. We have a strong owners team. As I said, we can bring fresh ideas, I think, to other projects, and we will obviously keep our eyes and ears open as to those types of opportunities and projects. No CEO would be a CEO if he didn't show his share price graph. And I think today there's a number of companies presenting, and I think a share price graph won't appear in many of those presentations, I suspect. But we can actually sit here and show a share price graph that has shown good volumes this last year, and shown an extremely good performance. But what I would say, and this is just apropos my own issues, is that you can see we've had periods when the price has dropped or stayed steady in spite of coming out with first capital production, we're under budget, we sold copper. We still had a price going down. As soon as we announced initiation of share buyback, inevitably, the price goes up. People like that. We stayed pretty steady between 90 and 100p. We're producing over, we're producing a good cost, the interims come out. No, what happens? Obviously, announce a dividend. Great, lovely, everybody loves it. So we came up and we did peak up at a 140. We're trading today up 6 or 7p on the basis of our results today, but we're trading around about the 115 to 20 mark, which again is, I think, a good result after a very tough year for our industry as a whole. And obviously, again, I can't leave without saying how much we've outperformed some of our peers in the marketplace over the last year. And that is it. And so, thank you for coming, but are there any questions in the audience here?
Sorry. Quick question on Unicorn. Are those based on 9 months of production with 6 months of depreciation?
They're based on eight months of production.
Yeah.
First copper. So it's all the costs in that period.
Yeah.
But you're right, it is 6 months of depreciation. That's only 6 months. But all the other costs are for the whole period, so I'm not skimped on a load of other costs, if that's what you possibly suggested.
No,
in fact, if you look at the interim results, actually, our unit costs are quite a bit higher than that. I think it's about 1858. The reason was we'd only had 2 months of production. We'd actually started leaching prior to actually producing the first copper, so there were costs we incurred there, which made the actual unit cost slightly higher. So I did expect it to be a bit less, but I'm still pleasantly surprised at how low the costs are for what we're doing.
Any other questions? No? Oh, yes, Louise.
Yes, quick one. Sorry, I might have missed this. On 530, running over the maximum capacity of the railway, and it will supply, when you're in the maximum capacity, your design will fall below, so you could be falling below the design.
Yeah, that, I was talking about it when I was talking about configuration. We have what I call three mix states. When we're running at anything in the region about 500, we use two in series. So the solution goes in the first one and then comes to a second one. So it's two stages of extraction. When we're running at high capacity, 750 plus, we bring on third units. We run two of them in series and one of them in parallel. And that one in parallel only has one passive extraction. So the extraction rate is about 60% on one pass. So two passes you get sort of 90, on one pass you get 60. The drive is about 65%.
I think we're done with questions in the room. Are there any questions on the phone in?
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen on the phone, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. To cancel this request, please press the star followed by the two. We have a question from Alex Schwarzkopf from Altima. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, everybody. Good results, thanks. A few clarifying questions. The cash number that you mentioned, this is a group position, or is it attributable cash?
33.9, Alex, is the group position as of the year end. So, if you remember when we announced the update in early January, I think I said $37.5 million. The difference between those numbers is simply that about $9 or $10 million, I can't remember the exact figure, was held in Kazakhstan. And obviously, when we account for it, I only can take 60% of the assets, and that's the difference. So, the snapshot Nick just mentioned as of Monday morning, $29.2 million. That's also just a snapshot, really, the amount of cash that we've got within the group, but not accounted for on a 60-40 basis necessarily.
Okay. You mentioned 29, right? The line is not very good.
Yep.
Okay. Second question. On the sulfide dumps, I understand they're better than you expected and they might be oxidized and all that. If you're saying the recovery is there at 45, what do you think as a guesstimate at this point, having run the oxidized dumps already, what do you think the cost of production will be there? I know it's too far in the future and all that stuff, but what are we looking at?
Well,
double of what you currently have?
No. I think, Alex, originally, when we did some original test work, recoveries were slightly lower, so we're seeing slightly higher recoveries now. But I think importantly, what we're seeing is a much lower acid consumption than we hitherto had expected. So, we haven't run any definitive numbers now. Costs will be slightly higher, but not markedly so. I would say on an equivalent basis, and obviously when we start then, other inflationary pressures will come to fore, but I wouldn't have thought more than 5 or 10 cents in terms of reagent cost for that western side. I'm looking across at Howard now, and he's nodding and saying, yeah, that's probably a realistic expectation.
Okay. All right. That sounds good.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. We have no further questions on the phone at this time.
Yeah. We have one further question in the room here.
You mentioned that you're selling copper and turning for the firm partially to claim back that.
Yeah.
Is there much more debt to be claimed back?
Yes, probably. I'm not a financial controller here, but it's just the magnitude thing. It's north of $2 million. Is that right, Alex? What we've done on the offtake agreement is we've agreed to sell 10,000 tons, effectively 1,000 tons, to sell locally. I think we estimate it might take 2.5 to 3 years to sell that copper to recover all of that. What we have actually done now, to be honest with you, we have put in a claim to reclaim that back, as you would do in the UK. However, this cutback actually doesn't necessarily have a great track record of saying VAT claims. So the best way is to offset it against other costs. It would be a long haul to recover it all through that process, if you want to think about selling copper locally. And the market's not mature enough locally to know that you're always going to get, 50 tons, 60 tons, whatever it may be per month. That's why we do an offtake. The local sale is a little bit ad hoc, say, whether people get your pants or what, because you can't rely on it from a commercial point. That answers the question.
Yeah. That's it. I think all the questions in the room are done here. And there are no more questions on the phone in.
Thank you, sir. There's no further questions.
Okay. Well, thank you very much indeed. I think we can call the presentation to an end, and thank you for all coming.
Okay.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That concludes today's Central Asia Metals 2012 Results Conference Call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.